Today, I have Lori with me to do a budgeting call. Lori, thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I'm super excited. So Lori and I, before I started recording, were saying that we've seen each other's names and messaged back and forth on Instagram and things. So there's already a familiarity, but this is our first face-to-face call. Lori, I'd love to hear, before we jump into the call, what made you sign up for something like this? Have you budgeted in other apps or have a specific financial goal that you want to achieve? What made you be like, yeah, this is for me?
So I budget for a living and accounting, but I don't have my own. And It's been really frustrating for me to not feel like my finances are in control. I've thought about other apps and I've maybe downloaded them and started. And then I'm like, God, this is hard. Why is this hard for me? I should understand how it is. I've been thinking I need to do something. And I saw your stuff and understood it. It felt a bit more easier and doable. I need something that I'm going to stick with. And I love Excel. And so The fact that this was in Excel actually was a big part of it. Because that's what works for me. So awesome. My main goal is to get out of debt and be organized in my finances.
You're not the first accountant I've talked to. And there's this guilt they carry. They're like, this should be easy for me. When I first met with my CPA, he said the same thing. He was like, oh my gosh, it's almost embarrassing that like this isn't, when he asked me what business I have or whatever. And I told him, I know they sound like they overlap, but in the same way that I understand almost nothing about taxes, it makes sense that you would understand almost nothing about personal budgeting. I think there's a sense that there's more overlap than there actually is.
Embarrassment for sure is like what probably has held me back for a long time from trying to figure out a resource.
Right. Because you're like, oh, I'm a CPA. This is what I do. Right. You know? Yeah. But it's different because if you're a CPA for taxes or a company or whatever, it's not your money. Like there's no emotional ties to it at all. And so as soon as you throw that in, it's not just numbers. It's not just a spreadsheet. It's your actual life. Like that is enough of a curveball that it throws a wrench in everything that you know and have trained for.
Absolutely.
So don't feel like, oh my gosh, I'm the only accountant like this. Not at all.
Oh, good. Not breaking mold.
No, you're not. So I'm going to share my screen so we can see what we have on the left. And right on the left, you have filled out the worksheet. I call it a finance snapshot. It's a summary of all the numbers we need to build an accurate budget. It's broken down into groups. First, we have income, several different streams of income coming in at different times of the month, different sizes, some variable, some not variable. So we have all those written down together. And then all expenses, which a lot of times the mistake people make when they're making a budget is that they make a list of bills. And then basically, as long as income minus bills has a surplus, then they're like, okay, that surplus is what I'll live off of. We want to include bills and spending, spontaneous spending or variable spending, our food, our shopping, our toiletries, all of those things, vacation, holidays. So we have all of those collected here. And then the last thing we compile is how much do we have in savings versus how much we want to have in savings. So for you, like you had said, an ideal emergency fund would be $10,500. I'm curious, how'd you come up with that number?
I looked at my bank activity for 4 months and I looked at an average-ish, like taking out some of the big weird things. Mm-hmm. And it was about $3,500 for 3 months. And so, I mean, really, it should probably be like twice as much, I guess, for six months potentially. But I'm like, let's just start with three.
Yeah, so that's a perfect way to do it. I tell people to start with a month of expenses. I do a little bit lower the month of necessary expenses. Once we fill out the budget, I'll highlight anything that we would count as necessary where we'll say, hey, even if we lost our income, we would continue to pay for these things. And that's where we arrive at that 1 month. So you're guessing it'll probably be like 8,000-ish. You can look at that. But the way you did it, it's ideal to start a line of thinking. And the last thing is debt. We always pay minimums on debt, but what we'll look at ideally is having a gap between income and spending in order to target two goals, main goal of building that emergency fund and then also paying down specifically high interest debt, which is debt with a 10% interest rate or higher, which for you would be all of them. We'll put those in order once we build the budget. In this 30-day summary on the left, we're translating this holistic summary into a specific budget by pay period. And a pay period means anything to anyone. It looks very different for lots of different people. For you, because you have lots of smaller incomes and then one main income, we budget by the main primary income, and then we will fill in other incomes into that primary income schedule. So you have a twice a month schedule, which is also what I currently budget on. So that means that your income comes always on the same two dates of the month, and that your bills are grouped together because bills that have a set due date are always going to fall, you know, in this group A and group B, basically. So the con of that, so that's a pro of having a twice a month pay schedule, is same two dates of the month. The bills that fall together pretty much always fall together. So you have a much more even pattern to your budget than someone who's paid like weekly or biweekly. The downside of that is that the pay periods themselves can be different lengths. I have a once a week babysitter and I pay her every Tuesday. So I budgeted to pay her two times per pay period, but I paid twice a month. So every once in a while, there's actually going to be three Tuesdays in a pay period instead of two. And I realized in the middle of the pay period that I needed to budget to pay her three times instead of two. So those are the kind of things, those are the traps that we fall into when we have a twice a month pay schedule. So we're going to go ahead across the top and fill out the dates here for the pay period. And what I do is not just list your payday, but a whole range from payday until the day before you're paid again, so that it makes it a lot easier as we're filling out the rest of the budget to peek and say, anything we have to pay for inside this range needs to be included in this column. So that would look like we'll have July 15th to 30th, and then July 31st to August 14th, August 15th to 30th, August 31st to September 14th, September 15th to 29th, and September 30th to October 14th. It's a little tedious and repetitive to fill it out this way. The advantage is that we're going to finish our time together with a budget that's specifically broken down by pay period and filled out all the way through mid-October. You get more bang for your buck. In one sit down of budgeting, by the time you fill it out, you have a very specific schedule. Now it's time to fill in the budget, the income here. So as we fill out the incomes, we're going to do a couple things. Your primary income is every single pay period. You also listed that that is not a variable income. So that's a good thing, because that means that we can plan on $2,270 at the very start of every single one of these pay periods we see here. Now, once we move into other incomes that might be on a different schedule or might be more variable, we have to take just a little bit more time to make sure we're accurately mapping out, are we going to get paid for that income in this pay schedule? Your next one is variable between 300 and 400. You wrote it out perfectly with 300. We'll plan for the lower side because it's easier to get paid more than you thought than to get paid less than you thought. This now is a calendar of your income. We can see how it's broken down into half month increments, and then each income is mapped out where it will fall. So one of the nice things about doing it this way is that this looks different from other budgeting apps. They would ask you to put all your monthly income in one number available in July, even though as we look at it this way in more of a calendar view, we can see that a lot of the pay periods end up being different than each other, certainly in an alternating pattern. And then we also have the ability to add in these less frequent incomes, like a quarterly one, with specific dates in mind, as opposed to having to average it out or treat every month as the same and things like that. We're working with $19,485 in income across six pay periods. This number won't change even as we include expenses in the budget, but what is the difference between your income and your expenses? So these bold numbers here are taking all income from the top of the pay period and subtracting all expenses below to constantly update us with how much income is still available. As we map out your expenses in the same way that we just did your income, we'll start to notice that there's going to be quite a variation among pay periods in how much is available. And that's completely normal. Completely normal to even have alternating pay periods that have a surplus followed by a deficit. If there's one pay period that tends to be a lot more bill heavy than the other ones, all of those patterns are typical inside of a budget. One of the first things I like to look at is to see how much of your take-home pay is going to housing. And so you're sitting at a great spot right there, because what I look at is for housing to be under a third of your take-home pay, under that 33% mark, and you're down at 21%. So that's great. Because of your pay schedule, I'm just going to copy and paste a whole month together. Even with housing and utilities added, you're still under 33%, which we look for that to be in housing alone. So that's perfect. And the reason I look at that is not necessarily that it means that everything's going to be beautiful in the rest of the budget, but when I see housing being like 35, 40% of take-home pay, it generally ends up being a budget where we don't have a lot of options on how to reallocate the way we spend, because the housing is that locked in, unchangeable number. A lot of times I can tell right away as I build the budget, ooh, okay, if this is tight, the only thing I can really suggest is to increase income. But if we have a tight budget where housing is a lower percent of take-home pay, it usually means we can make the budget feel better by changing spending and not having to go out and increase income. So that's what I'm noticing from yours, even as we're just in the beginning of building it. Now, food, I look at being 20% or less of take-home pay, and you're at 14. So again, green check mark for your categories and your spending. I'm going to highlight this. I use purple for sinking funds, just things that we like want to set money aside. So what I'm going to do is highlight home repairs. So what you can do with things is that you can, if you need to spend it, it's budgeted for that. It's great. Spend it. But then also there's probably going to be months where you need less than 100 and then months where you need more than 100. So that's the ideal situation for a sinking fund, where we say, hey, maybe in August you have 100 budgeted and only spend 30 on replacing a water filter or whatever. Put the 70 aside, because there's also going to be months where you budget 100 and you need more than 100 to take care of your stuff. Okay, car insurance. Does that include home or do you have young drivers?
I have two young drivers.
Okay. And as long as that's the case, this is the right number I would expect to see. It's just the nature of having young drivers. Unfortunately, they're so expensive. I used to work at a State Farm agent's office.
Whoa.
And you would think it was like a counseling session of like grief or something when someone would come in where they're like, my car insurance has been like $105 a month for years and years and years. And now I add one person and it's $600. Well, that one person is 16 years old.
Right. Well, you can see there's no car payments because cars are old.
Yep, that's good. And that lowers your insurance. Yeah, that's another thing too, is people are like, oh, I'm going to get my teen a brand new car because that's safer. And it's like, well, the newer the car, the higher the insurance. And you put a new car with a new driver, and that's a recipe for a disaster in a car insurance company's eyes. So yeah, much better to stick the teens on an old car.
Yeah.
You can see as we're filling it out, even though your income was a very set pattern of like the same income across each one, the amounts left in each pay period are quite different. And so that's something that a monthly budget doesn't highlight for us, is how distinct each pay period can be. Because as much as we assume each month is the same in both our income and both our expenses, even these little random things where like, okay, this bill is paid every other month and this bill is paid quarterly, but it lands in a month where we also have the every other month. Those things are knowable pieces of information, but when we leave them out of the budget, it can mess with what we thought would happen with our money versus what actually ends up happening with our money.
Yeah, it's really interesting to see it this way.
I think the best way to describe it is a calendar of money. Like, it's just, I'm not doing anything, you know, it's like, I don't have any grand secret or like I'm revealing like, oh, you know, this really complex way of running money and only I can figure this out or whatever. It's simply like putting a heavier emphasis on the timing of when things are going to happen versus a budget that's a month that just summarizes everything together in one place, which ends up leaving out, do I actually have the income available when those expenses come due?
Great.
This pattern is normal. If you notice a positive followed by a negative, what we look for in that case, because that can sometimes be alarming when people see a negative, they're like, oh my gosh, I'm spending more than I make. You're not. That's possible. If everyone was negative, obviously, then that would be the case. What I look at when I see a few negatives is I look at this number to actually determine, are we spending more than we make or not? Because this is summing up all six of the amount left. You're not spending more than you make. It's the nature of your income relating with your expenses. Sometimes we have a surplus and sometimes a deficit. On average, we have $357 extra per pay period, even though some pay periods have a lot of extra and some pay periods that actually have a deficit. So all of those pieces of information can just help us to be not alarmist about seeing those pay periods that have deficits, because once we take all of these data points into account, it's less problematic than it might initially appear. With that in mind, one thing we could do is that this repairs and maintenance, like that's totally in your control to decide how much it is and when it is. So what I'm going to do is move that over to the pay period that have a surplus. Okay. So you want to do that with anything we can, because that will just even out your pay periods. So like with car repairs, in the short term, just looking at this number of $357 per pay period available, budget a little bit less than $100 a month towards car repairs, simply because if we take the extra that you have available and we start divvying it up in too many directions with the savings account, we're going to be left with a very small pocket of money for your bigger goals like your emergency fund and your debt payment. As we discuss changes to income or spending and or targeting your goals, it's nice to see a side by side, because it helps to see, okay, if I have to make changes like decreasing my expenses temporarily in order to achieve my goals, what kind of difference does that actually make in the budget? So that's why I duplicate those, so that we can, as we make changes, we don't lose what it originally looked like and we can see a true difference. So with that in mind, a couple of things I do right away. First, before we target your goals, is there anything in light of what we see with how much is available each pay period? Is there anything you want to decrease spending on?
So down in the entertainment section, we go to the movies at least once a week. Mm-hmm. We don't need to do that. There's enough stuff to watch. So we could change, like remove, I guess, the one that has the first to the 15th, essentially, that one. We could take that one out. Okay. And reduce entertainment to 50 and move that to the other pay periods.
I'm going to do 75. And here's why. Because taking the movies out and cutting entertainment in half at the same time might be an unrealistic change in the short term. Okay. It might be sustainable in the long term. I'm going to do 75 and I am going to move it over, simply because I would rather do that. And then maybe, you know, maybe in August, September, you're like, hey, 50 is enough to stretch us and allow us to do something fun. Then we could change it. But in one category, I shy away from making too many changes too fast. I want to err more on the side of sustainable than extreme. So I love what you identified, but I'm going to be the anti-budgeter that bumps it up a little.
Okay. Thank you.
Yes. Yes. And this, like, it can feel like a lot, but you're spending 7% of your take-home pay in this entire subscription and fund category, right? So it's really not one of the main weights on your budget overall.
Okay.
So just those two changes brought us from an average of 230 to 270 a pay period, which is no small thing when you repeat it over and over across the pay periods. We do have a spot in the budget called rollover for next pay period, to set money aside from one pay period to use in another. If you needed $100 more in this pay period, we would put $100 in this rollover, which reduces how much is available by $100. Then I put a matching amount in this checking account balance line to say, if I don't spend $100 out of the October or out of the August 15th pay period, that means at minimum my checking account balance would be $100 on the 31st. In addition to all my new income, that made $100 extra dollars available in a pay period without earning more than I already am.
Okay.
So that's how it would happen if you need that in the future. What we have here is these target amounts I call the budget buffer. In this amount left row, I look for, based on family size and age, how much do I want to not budget for going specifically towards any goals, because I want to use it for those spontaneous little things that pop up that are very small, but they tend to derail the budget if they happen too often. So looking at expenses and income and those things, I think if we have like 120-ish per pay period unallocated, which would be like $60 per week of random spending or overspending, that kind of gives you enough margin to absorb little things. For example, what that would mean is that it gives you the flexibility that if your groceries ends up being $20 higher than what you budgeted in a random pay period, you don't have to rearrange your budget. It can be absorbed into that buffer.
Okay.
So looking at your goals, I would say the very first goal for you would be emergency fund, because even though we have debt with high interest, what actually keeps us into debt is not the existing debt that we already have. It's the lack of a savings account in the first place. So if we think about it as, don't think about the emergency fund as being something that delays your debt payoff. Think about it as the first step in debt payoff. Because what it does is ensure that once you start targeting your debt, you don't have to go back into debt while you're paying off debt for anything that comes up. And that's often what happens, is that people get stuck in this vicious cycle of what bothers them more is the debt than the lack of savings. So they'll target the debt, but without a savings account, the debt starts to come down. And as soon as an unexpected expense pops up, the debt comes back up because we don't have any other option for how to pay for it. So that in mind, this emergency fund here is going to be that first goal, but let's identify how much we want that to be. So what I'm going to do is highlight the things we would continue to pay even in the event of a job loss, essentially. That's how we filter out what's necessary versus unnecessary. Housing, utilities, food, including work lunches, but not restaurants and coffee shops, gas, car, and car insurance.
You can take out work lunches.
Okay. Car insurance, life insurance, kids' supplies, minimum payments on debt. If you're not paid once a month, why are you budgeting that way? A monthly budget ignores the fact that sometimes your expenses are due before the next paycheck is available. A pay period budget is built around your unique pay schedules so that your money doesn't feel like a mess. Create an accurate, realistic plan for getting the most out of each paycheck. Get started budgeting by pay period today with the best-selling budget template and mini course from me, Debt-Free Mom. It's available for just $9 at debtfreemom.co/template. I spent years feeling frustrated that my money wasn't working the way it should. It wasn't until I discovered the magic of budgeting by pay period rather than by month that my money started to feel stable. Pay Period Budget Academy is my signature budgeting course that helps hundreds of women take control of their home finances. Join today at debtfreemom.co/PBA and use the code PODCAST at checkout to get 20% off your membership. $3,885 is a month of necessary expenses. It's different than typical spending and income, but a good gauge, like I would say $4,000, like just round that to a solid $4,000. That would be a 1 month emergency fund for you because it would cover 1 month of necessary expenses. Now for a full emergency fund, we want to multiply that by between 3 and 6. What I would say, just for round numbers, a $4,000 emergency fund is a starter emergency fund that we want to hit before we start targeting debt. And then after paid off high interest debt, some anywhere between like $15,000 and $20,000 would be a full emergency fund for you, basically. First, $15,000 would be adequate. With the emergency fund we're calculating, we have to include minimum payments on debt as part of those necessary expenses. When those are gone, how much of necessary expenses do I have? We can take those out, and $3,000 is a month of necessary expenses. $4,000 would be your starter emergency fund, and $15,000 your full. This is a very fluid, as time goes on, those amounts are going to change in either direction. So for example, in ours, we had one amount for our emergency fund for a long time. And then when we just bought our house, our mortgage is much larger than our previous rent was. So our current emergency fund became less than 3 months of expenses when it had been 3 months of expenses. So we're currently beefing up our emergency fund to get it back to 3 months of our new expenses. So that amount can flux in terms of how much it covers. Okay, so with those in mind and the fact that you already have $1,600 that you would consider an emergency fund, we only need to add $2,400 to your emergency fund to hit that first goal and then refocus instead of putting extra money to the emergency fund, anything that had been going to the emergency fund from that point forward would go to debt payments. Okay. I'll look at how much you can put into the emergency fund each pay period is that if we want to have about $120 left over available on every pay period, I'm simply looking at what would the difference be between the current amount left and 120. So again, very, very normal for every pay period to be very different. You just made a surprised face. That's typical and surprising for people. They'll make a budget like this is my general budget and this is what I can do every month. So they might write down, I can put $400 into savings every month. But as soon as we map it out this way, and like we didn't include anything wild, we just included normal bills when they were due. And it creates quite a variation between having nothing available this pay period all the way up to $670 available in this pay period. The reason this one has more than the others, you have several bills you pay every other month. They fall in these odd months. August is an even month. And so it has more available than the other ones do.
Great.
That's already putting that at almost 3,000 by the end of September, which is amazing. If the pattern holds, then by the end of the year, you will, and it would probably happen before the end of the year, you would have a $4,000 emergency fund. And at that point, what I recommend then is to stop adding to the emergency fund and take anything that had been going there and put it towards debt.
Okay.
So the last thing I want to do, even though we're not going to plan for money going to debt in the next six pay periods, I do want to put them in order and just identify what the best order would be. So what I look at is the two main pieces of information that decide what order we should pay off the debt are the balance and the interest rate. Because all of yours have very similar interest rates, paying them off from smallest to largest is the best method. Because first of all, not only is your store card number one is your lowest balance, it's also your highest interest rate. And so if you do the debt avalanche method or the debt snowball method, either way, this one's going to be first. And then moving down, when two debts are similar in balance, then I choose whichever is the higher interest rate. So if these were flipped where this one that's slightly higher had a much higher interest rate, I would pay that off first. Because your next smallest one also has a higher interest rate. The personal line is second, store card third. You're right down the line. We don't have to rearrange them. They'll be smallest balance to largest. These will most likely, the 0% interest rates will most likely expire as you're paying them off based on your rate of savings or your rate of your goals. So even though these are currently 0% interest, by the time you're working through your debt snowball, that interest rate is going to kick back in. If you pay off these two and store card number two is still at 0% interest, instead of focusing on that one, try to pay down cards that are actively charging you interest first. And a lot of times people do it backwards where they're like, oh, I want to pay down the 0% interest before the interest rate kicks back in. What actually takes the most advantage of that 0% interest is to pay down cards that are actively charging you interest while the other ones are on the 0%.
Okay.
I usually highlight these numbers, dark green for high interest debt and light green for low interest, but we have all high interest in your case.
Okay.
All dark green. So that would be the order of debts. Now, the reason the debt snowball works well is that as soon as you pay off the first debt, you free up $170 a month so that whatever you had been paying monthly towards that store card one, you can add that amount plus the minimum payment from store card one to the minimum payment of the personal line. And so that second one will get paid off way faster than the first one did. And so if you apply that same principle three or four debts down the road, the speed at which you're going to be able to pay off the last three debts will be lightning fast compared to the first three. That first one is the hardest to get paid off. But as soon as you get that paid off, the speed that you're paying off the second one, you'll be like, oh my gosh, I have like hundreds a month to put towards this next debt because you're pulling it from all these different places. Right. It will go slow at first, but it will speed up quicker than you are used to. And that's a good thing.
Yeah. Well, I'm hearing you say it like that in my head. I'm like, obviously. Mm-hmm. But something about hearing it is like, exciting.
Because what's so normal to happen is that we take how much we have available right in this current moment. And we imagine that that's like locked in, that that's always what it's going to be. Last month, I had $160 to put towards savings. If I can only do $160 every month, I'm never going to chip away at this. But that's not actually how it works. As soon as we get that first one, if you have $160 a month, as soon as the first one is paid off, the amount left doubles because we add minimum payment to it. The margin we have currently is not going to always be the margin we have.
Okay, cool.
So how do we actually use this? When that first pay period starts, what do we do? This functions as a plan for your money to map out in advance what you would like to do, but it also functions as a tracker to pay attention to, compared to what I thought would happen, what actually ends up happening. So a couple of things. I use color coding, filling in the buckets to signal where I'm at in the pay periods. Anything taken directly out of my checking account, the colors I use are blue and orange. They can be any color as long as you know what they mean. Blue to me is my complete paid color, like that has come out of the checking account in the amount expected. As soon as that happens, I fill it in. And so then that to me is like, okay, I don't have to pay attention to that expense anymore because it's done and paid for. If there's anything charged to a credit card, I use orange as a pending color, which to me is like, I've been charged for it, but I have not actually paid for it out of my checking. So that can apply to credit card charges, but it can also apply to like you wrote a check for something and they haven't deposited it yet. So last night I wrote a check to the pool for my kid's birthday party. I turned that cell orange and that's just my visual reminder like, hey, you sent this money out into the world, but it hasn't been withdrawn from your account yet. It's easy to forget those things, right? And then somebody deposits something or they pull it and then you're like, oh my gosh, I forgot. I sent that to someone. I use that orange as middle of the road, like something has happened with this charge, but I haven't paid it yet. Once I pay it, I change it from orange to blue. I'm done with it. As things change in the pay period or come up, the whole goal of this amount left is to be able to use it. If something comes up, let's say the kids have a school fundraiser and you give $15. The beauty of having that buffer, that extra amount left, is those small incidental things can simply be added to the budget, even if it's during the pay period. We don't have to completely rearrange everything to add them in. I call them trackers at the bottom. These are for categories where we budget one full amount, but spend it in multiple transactions throughout the pay period. Those are often the hardest ones to pay attention to and stay on track with. So what I've created here is these like basically a mini budget that if we say, okay, for groceries, I'm doing $125 a pay period. You can record the store and amount. And then if you do that, like if you say Aldi 102, then this will let you know, okay, you have still inside the plan, inside the budget. You could go to the store again a week later and buy $23 worth of milk and produce to stock up. And that's still going to be on plan. And just highlight these at the end of the pay period and clear them out and restart the next pay period.
Okay.
They can also be used for other things. This one here especially can easily be copied and pasted if you want to use it for additional categories. How do I stay in tune with my budget once the pay period starts as opposed to looking at it before the pay period starts?
Yeah, that's perfect.
Do you have any questions about how I set it up or use it once the pay period begins?
So everything essentially that isn't through a pay period, those things are things that didn't happen yet, hit the account. And then do you just leave them there and or do you put them into the next column over so that when they do come, like if they're running, I don't know, if a check didn't clear.
Yeah. So this credit card too on the 14th, sometimes depending on where the 14th falls, it might withdraw on the 15th. When that happens, I take it out of the pay period that's ending and put it into the pay period that's beginning. So for example, I have the 200 planned, but it didn't actually get spent, which means 200 would be in my checking account balance unallocated at the start of this pay period. By doing that, I've gotten myself back to baseline. I now have the buffer amount I originally had. That can happen for multiple things. So you could move that over. Maybe something happened on a weekend. You only went on one of your dates, this one, and you're going to do an extra one in this pay period. You can do that with multiple transactions. Once you've adjusted all the transactions to the next pay period, then we could say, okay, I have 300 left over here. So 300 is going into the next pay period and I've balanced myself out.
So to start for July 15th, I should be adding what I have in my bank account
As of July 15th, what you would want to do the night of July 14th or on the 15th when you just subtract your paycheck out is you say, okay, there was $450 in there on July 14th, which means that I have $450 and all my new income for the pay period. So you can decide if you want to use that money. The checking account is more a waiting room for money than it is like a savings account. We don't want to let money just build up and sit there. There's many other things we could do with it. One good thing to do is to choose a nice round even number that's your false zero in your checking account. If you decide 300 is my zero and I'm not going to touch 300, it's so if we have things that come out earlier or later than what we thought they would, that we're not going into the red simply because of that. And then what you can do is if you decide, let's say you have 450 in your checking account on July 14th. If you decide 300 is my false zero that I'm not going to touch, I'm not going to plan for it to go anywhere, what we would actually put in this checking account balance would be 150.
Okay.
I'm willing to use $150 out of what is available, and I don't want to touch the 300. The only reason I say make it a nice round number is so you can quickly do the mental math in this pay period. You could put $150 into your emergency fund, and you're still left with that buffer. So you can play around with it and decide what number makes you comfortable with that false zero. How much of that money do you want to use towards your goals? The nice thing about starting out budgeting with this method where your goal is the emergency fund is that as a fail safe, if you put too much in the emergency fund, you can pull it back out if we overshoot what we can do with our goals. We can't do that once we're targeting debt payments. If we make an extra debt payment, we can't reverse it. And so that's one of the other reasons that first having a healthy emergency fund before we target debt is the proper order to do things, because in that situation, we would use part of the emergency fund to cover something we forgot or that we went over or that happened that we didn't know about when we made that debt payment.
Okay.
If you have questions, every coaching call is like a fire hose of numbers. Once you start using it, questions will come up. Email me. If you hit July 15th and you're like, I don't think I set this up right with my checking account balance or whatever, I can get back into the file and help you out with any like, okay, you know, if you put this number here, it would work better or whatever. So please don't feel like as I sign off from this call that I'm just like releasing you with no help or support.
No, I'm excited. I am genuinely excited as an accountant. I love numbers. I get off on making them balance.
It's enjoyable.
To see it laid out like this is like home. It makes me comfortable and I feel confident I can do it. So thank you so much for
welcoming. You're very welcome. I'm also a spreadsheet. Like I put everything in my life into a spreadsheet. But I do think even for people who aren't spreadsheet, I think one of the big changes compared to budgeting methods that you've tried in the past is that when we only can see like a 30-day window at a time, it makes us feel secure about the next 30 days, but it still makes us feel like, well, the month after that is this big black hole of, am I going to be able to cover everything? What if something goes wrong? A timeline with dates and numbers can give us calm from now to October 15th, feel farther away. I have a secure and stable plan for my money.
Yeah, I love seeing it laid out like this. In the beginning of October, then I just create a new one.
There's blank ones at the bottom. You can't duplicate the existing one, but for the first time, there is something to starting blank and having it side by side with what you just finished. The process makes you really in tune with what it's set up and how you want to do it. After that, you can duplicate and make copies. But I do think taking time to fill it out exactly the way I did makes you really feel like, okay, I can take control of this.
No, just filling out the sheet makes you more aware and think about it. It was a good exercise.
Okay. Thanks, Lori.
All right.
When it comes to showing appreciation, the gift you choose says everything. Minky Couture luxury blankets make the perfect statement. Soft, stylish, and unforgettable. Whether you're thanking a client, rewarding an employee, or celebrating a milestone, nothing delivers warmth and gratitude like a Minky blanket. With custom options and elegant packaging, Your gift will stand out and be remembered long after the moment has passed. Make your corporate gifting extraordinary with Minky Couture, luxury you can feel. Visit minkycouture.com to get started.